My name is Luis Cabrera. I am a program manager with the machine learning, Azure machine learning team. And more specifically, I work with the team that is in charge of machine learning APIs, which we discussed a little bit yesterday at the keynote. With me, I have Veselin Diev. He's a senior data scientist in our team. And he will be helping me later. Later on, he'll talk a little bit about customer churn prediction. And I have a question for you. How many of you were there at the keynote yesterday? Everybody? Or okay. So it looks like 80% of you. So I won't repeat everything that we did. I will just briefly touch on it. But what I want to tell you is that by the end of this hour, we have a lot to cover. But I hope that you have a feeling for the kinds of problems that we can solve in retail using machine learning, and that it's actually not rocket science, or at least we hope it's not rocket science thanks to the work that we're doing. We're not going to cover everything that can be used in retail. For instance, the people that were in this room a second ago were talking about price elasticity. That's related to retail, but I'm not going to have a chance to talk on that. I'm not also going to talk about how to create custom models. There have been some sessions on how to use the Azure Machine Learning Studio, so I recommend you check them out. But there are a few scenarios that we will talk about. For instance, what products is this guy most likely to want to purchase? Wouldn't it be great if we had a magic ball where we knew exactly what he wants so that we could sell it to him? As Sarah is leaving our store, when is she coming back? Is she actually going to come back to do business with us? Or maybe Jing hasn't been around to our online store or to our brick and mortar store. And we want to know how to provide the right incentives to Jing so that she comes back. Maybe Johan, you know, checks the kiosk or some advertising that we place. And how do we make sure that that advertising is the right advertising to him? Or in general, what are my customers thinking? How can I make sense of all this data that I have about my customers to really take actionable items? Okay, you have seen this slide many times, and we are talking about this right side of the architecture, in a sense, right? That means that I'm going to be talking about services that are more or less more baked, right? They are not just like the bottom of the platform. They are towards the end of the platform. Furthermore, I will briefly touch on perceptive APIs. But there was a session just about that yesterday that was provided by LLCyclic. So I'm not going to go super deep on that. But if you're interested in that, I recommend you check the recording. One of the missions of Cortana Analytics is to, in a sense, democratize machine learning. We want to make sure advanced analytics and machine learning are accessible to everyone, not just to the data scientists, but also to the developer and to the business decision maker on every platform and on every device, right? So our goal is to make it super simple for you to access these capabilities. One way in which we're doing that is through the machine learning APIs that we have at our gallery. These are at gallery.azureml.net today. So everything that I'm talking about today is something that you, later tonight, when you are like super excited to continue doing Cortana Analytics stuff, you can log in from your hotel or whatever and get started working on it. So let's start with a demo. So I'm going to repeat a little bit of the demo that we did yesterday, but I'm going to dig a little bit deeper into how we put it together and how easy it was to use it. So for those of you that weren't there at the keynote yesterday, the story here is that I want to create a kiosk or an advertising display that is not just any display. It's a display that can actually personalize its advertising to you, to each of you. Right? So I'm going to actually get closer to this. And the light is kind of funky here. But I am going to have it recognize me, and it recognized me as a male in his 30s. Therefore, you know, it provides some cool recommendation, like something manly, like race car driving lessons, right? But if I were to be a child, and I didn't bring my daughter, but I brought her picture, and I'm going to get out of the way so that, very good. So it thinks that it's a child, right? Then it will provide a different recommendation. Furthermore, if it sees a father with his daughter just having fun at the mall. Sorry, it took a picture of my email while I was doing that, so it got really confused. Sorry. The machine learning is just as good. I'm 62 today. Let me try that one more time. I think it's the data here. No. Okay, that's better. So now it provides a recommendation that is appropriate for my daughter and I, right? It knows there is a guy that has a daughter. She wants a play area. We'll sell him the $3,600 play area. And that what we did yesterday, and I had Revital help me out, is that we said, you know, what if this kiosk could understand what you are saying also, not only what it sees, right? So she has a better accent than I do, so hopefully it will work. This is very expensive. So it worked out pretty well, actually. And you can see that it was able to transcribe my speech into text. And we actually called one more API on top of that for sentiment analysis to realize that I'm actually not very happy with this play area, right? It's only 0.5% happiness, which is on the red area of this sentiment meter, right? And it changes the recommendation, and now it's only $800, which I feel like, okay, it's more affordable. Maybe I should buy it for my daughter, right? Okay, so that's what we talked about yesterday. But the key here is that we did something that looks pretty advanced and pretty fun. I mean, at least it was amusing for each of you yesterday. But it was actually very simple, right? Because all the hard work was done for me. If we really think of the core of this demo, I just did three things. I took a picture, and then I took that picture and sent it to a service. That's not rocket science. And then back came metadata about the people in that picture, right? The age, the gender. And it can do even more interesting things. If you train the face APIs with pictures of people, it actually can say, it's not only like a 30-year-old male, but it says, oh, you know, that's actually Chris. Because it can actually learn from pictures from Chris. But that's very simple. No rocket science there. Then the next step was, okay, let's actually use speech and send the speech. And then the service just returns feedback, which is just text, which I can display very easily on my UI here. Once again, not super complicated. Underneath, there is a lot of complexity, right? But we took care of that. You don't have to worry about it. The same with sentiment. You send some text, you get a number back. Very simple. Okay. So that's our goal, to make your life very simple with this and other services. So let's go back. Let's talk a little bit about that text analytics service, for instance, and how you may want to use it. If I go to an online store, such as Macy's, they actually have quite a bit of data from their customers. Right? Actually, here you can see that there are 264 reviews for just this coat, right? That's super valuable information that Macy's has, a very clear feedback from their customers about what they think. You know, you can even see like who did 5 stars versus 3 stars or 1 star and so forth. Now, as Macy's myself, let's say I own Macy's. This is interesting, but the problem is I have hundreds of reviews for thousands or hundreds of thousands of products. How can I know really what my customers think or what I should do to improve a product line, for instance? I could read all of those, but no one does it, right? Like, it's so much. I used to be a program manager in the Bing Maps team, and we shipped an application. And every Friday, I would spend like 15 minutes going through the reviews and trying to see what I will decipher out of people's feedback. But you know, that's not very scientific, right? Like that's, maybe I took the wrong sample and I fixed the wrong thing, right? So what if instead I could really understand what aspects of my product or services people really think are good, which ones are bad? Maybe for this coat, you know, people love the fabric, but maybe they hate the sleeves or something, right? That's really the information that I want. I want it to be actionable. So then I can go and say, oh, you know, the sleeves are too tight. Let's fix that. And then our customers are going to be happier. I sell more, and then I'm happier too. So, sorry, pointing to the ground. Oh, I don't know what happened to my pointer. Let's move here. So let me actually show you this text analytics service in action. Let me go here. So if I actually had it right here and I can try it. So I can enter some text such as, let's say I'm happy first. So I love the color of the coat. It is, I don't know, beautiful or something. Obviously, this is going to be a very positive sentiment sentence. And you can see that it was able to highlight or put the key phrases there, color and coat. It was able to understand that I'm talking about those items. And now I can aggregate that data and say whenever people talk about the color or the in this coat, what is the average sentiment, right? Similarly, if let's say I have a negative review and I say something like, oh, the sleeves are really tight and uncomfortable. Okay. Now it knows that I'm talking about the sleeves, and as you can see, the sentiment is on the red section. It's not good, right? So now I can actually create a word cloud or your favorite visualization for this information and actually know how to respond and action on these insights, right? So text analytics, a very, very useful service. I should point out that we train this with a lot of text and the sentiment of people. So actually, even words by themselves have sentiment. Interestingly enough, for instance, if and it doesn't get so confusing. So for instance, if I say Spider-Man, who doesn't love Spider-Man? Right? Everyone likes, well, 83% of the population likes Spider. But if I were to say Spider-Man, right, that probably looks pretty scary. Not only, you know, it's very negative sentiment, right? Okay, so you can make fun of all kinds of people with this API, by the way. So, okay, so the other beautiful thing is that you can actually recognize sentiment over time. This is an actual graph that we did for a customer. And we noticed a pattern. We noticed that in October of 2013, the sentiment was higher than in October of 2014. And we're like, what's going on, right? Why it's the same, more or less the same time of the year, just different year. And why did it change dramatically? When we looked into it, and it really just took a question of minutes, we didn't have to read all the reviews and so forth, it turns out that they didn't have a lot of items in stock. So people were like, oh, I cannot find my size. And we were able to quickly realize what were the problem areas for that particular period of time. You can know who your fans are, who your critics are, right? If they're your fans, maybe you want to highlight them. If they're your critics, maybe you want to talk to them and see how you can improve and make them happy. Okay, so that's one service. The other service that we have that is actually probably the one that people or the partners that we're working with love the most is recommendations. And the reason that they like it so much is because they are making money, right? Cha-ching. So they put recommendations on their site, they work with us, and all of a sudden they are selling more products, right? So it's this beautiful thing that happens. So let me start with a story for this one. So when I was a kid, I'm from Guatemala, and in Guatemala, when I was a kid, there were three TV channels. One of them was horrible, like you wouldn't want to spend any time on it. So then that left me with two options. I wanted to maximize my time or the quality of my time on TV. So I will spend like 10 seconds watching one show, move to the other one, another 10 seconds, and then I was able to make the perfect decision as to what show to watch, right? my kids have a different problem. They, you know, if you look at their Xbox and if you count all the options that they have, including Netflix and other streaming services like that, at any point, there are over 100,000 streaming options. How can these kids make these decisions, right? It's impossible to optimize your TV viewing habits this way, right? So what Xbox did is actually they said, you know what? This is a large catalog. Let's create a recommendation engine because people have very short attention span, right? So you want to help them, give them what they need when they need it. So that's how they solve their problem. You can see this approach being used in many, many companies that are very successful, Netflix, Amazon, and so forth, right? They tell you, oh, you're looking at this, I bet you're gonna love to buy this, right? And you're like, oh yeah, actually that's what I want, and then you buy it. So we actually, in our effort to democratize machine learning, we said, okay, let's take that recommendations engine that we built for the Xbox, and let's make it available so anyone can use it. And that's the recommendations engine that you see in our gallery. So we have spent a lot of time and investment creating this beautiful recommendations engine that scales to any needs that you have, right? It's ready for production. So if you go to the gallery and look at the recommendations engine, let me go back to the gallery quickly here, you will notice that there is an example there, just to kind of give you an idea of the type of things that you can do, right? So it's saying, for this mouse, just looking at your prior transactions, you don't have to give me any information that you don't have. You know what you sold in the past, for instance. I can tell you that the product that a customer is most likely to want to purchase is this other keyboard, for instance. I can also create a model based on the visits of pages and the viewing habits on your website, and I can tell you, the person that checks this mouse out, statistically speaking, these are the three other products that they want to take a look at, right? Okay, so, oops, sorry, let me go back. Let me close Outlook, or otherwise you'll see everything that my boss has to say about my presentation. The way that you can create this recommendations engine or recommendations model is that you just provide us your catalog and your usage information, and then we generate this customized recommendations model. If we were to look at the format of each of these files, a catalog is very simple. Think of it as just a list of all the items that you sell. A product ID, the name of the product, what type of item it is, and some description, right? Very simple, everyone has that. And then you also give us as a list of all your transactions. Think of all the transactions that you have done for the last month, let's say, right? And that's information such as user X bought item Y at this time, right? And you can see a sample line from the usage files at the bottom of this slide. Okay, so once we have these two files, you just give them to us, and we have APIs. When I say you give them to us, it's really you just call some APIs. We have a UI to do this as well. And then you have your customized recommendations model. Once that exists, you just pass it an item ID. Let's say I have this shirt, and I say, a person that wants to purchase this shirt is also likely to want to buy this pair of shoes and this other shirt and this belt, right? Very, very simple. So it doesn't only take one item, but it can actually take multiple items as input. And that, because that the signal is stronger now, you can provide even better recommendations. For instance, if I had onions alone by themselves, right, maybe my recommendations is, oh, somebody's likely to want to buy ketchup and something else, right? But the moment that I have onions and soy sauce and carrots, I say, you know what, this guy wants to make Chinese food, right? And then I can recommend chow mein noodles and mushrooms, right? So the model can figure out those patterns. That's the beauty of it. It can, without us having to introduce all kinds of rules and trying to think, is it Chinese food or is it French food, right? The machine learning can learn those patterns. That's the beauty of it. So a question may be then, aha, you have not sold this new item that I got in my inventory yesterday. How are you gonna figure out what to recommend for it? Well, so I have never sold, let's say, this scarf, right? I never sold it. We call those cold items, right? Never sold it, just came in a box yesterday. I don't know what to do with it. But I have sold other scarves. So what I do is piggyback on the information or on the learnings that I had for other similar products. So for instance, I have sold this Sumi scarf that I had in my catalog, remember? And how does it know that they are related? It's because you can add features, what we call custom features. In this case, maybe I add features such as the price, the season when I sell the item, maybe the type of material, I don't know, right, the manufacturer, any kind of features like that. And those can help me figure out which items are likely to be similar to the other item that I have never sold. And now I can recommend something similar to this item given the other items that I have sold in the past. Right? So that's the cold items problem. The other topic that is worth mentioning is that people's habits change over time. The purchase habits that you had for last week, or maybe last year, depending on your business, are not going to be the same as the purchase habits of this week or this year. They're going to change. So you want to, you know, you want to have the best model ever, so you want to have it up to date. And the way that you do that, if we go back to our diagram, is the moment somebody buys an item or clicks on it or adds it to their market basket, you can send those little usage events. You can say, oh, you know, user Y just bought item X, right? So you send us these little events, and we aggregate them. And then, or if you want to aggregate them yourself, let's say that just the way that your system works, you want to like kind of give us a bulk every once in a while, you can do that too. And once we have that, you can actually call the retraining API that allows you to have this model up to date. And because it's just an API, you can decide if you want to do that once a year, once a month, once every 2 hours. It's up to you. Azure Data Factory, and I'm not going to go very deep on how to use Azure Data Factory, but you can check out the sessions on Azure Data Factory, can help you streamline this process as well, including any pre-processing or post-processing of data that you want to do with the catalog and usage information to extract it, or even to cache the recommendations close to your website, for instance, right? Okay, but I want you to think that what I'm telling you is not just for retail, or at least not just for retail scenarios. And the beauty of it is that it's this engine, right? This recommendations engine that can be used in many, many different aspects. Media, for instance, a person that watched this show is also likely to want to watch this other show. Documentation. Right? How do you make it easier for people to find information that they need when they need it? Right? There are tons of articles, very hard to search. But if you know that someone was interested in this, you know, WPF documents, they are very likely to want to see these other WPF documents as well. Okay, so with that, let me just kind of show you what a catalog and usage may look like, and then it's a big file. So let me actually skip that and go straight into, okay, there we go. So a catalog file, you know, it's as simple as this, right? So, you know, I have some products. This actually is data from the Microsoft Store, right? And then an item ID, some name for the item, and then some category. As simple as that. Not rocket science again. And the usage, as I said, is a similar spreadsheet, but that has the transactions, right? And now, if I go to the recommendations UI that I wanted to show you, you can see that I can just upload the catalog file, the usage file, and create any number of builds with whatever. There are some parameters that you can set, and then you can play with the models and see how well they did. Actually, let's score that. Let's take the Microsoft Store catalog, for instance. And I'm going to pick, for instance, a Disney Interactive Studios Infinity figure, Mike Wazowski. If you have seen Monsters, you know that's the little guy with one eye. And The recommendations for that are other Disney interactive figures. So it seems to me like children that buy that tend to buy more than one, and we see that correlation in the engine. Let's pick something completely different. Let's say this Xbox 360 headset. And let's see. It says that the top recommendation for somebody that buys that headset is a chatbot for Xbox 360. So it makes sense. The beauty of it is it's the machine figured it all out, right? Okay, so let's go back here. Just to showcase one of our customers, JJ Foods, they are actually the ones that had this scenario where they figured like, oh, this guy wants to make Chinese food. And the reason is that they actually sell products to restaurants. If you here in the US, we have Cisco, and you see those big trucks, Cisco with an S, not with a C. They are the Cisco of the United Kingdom, pretty much. And after they started using a recommendations engine, they were able to increase their sales. Actually, 6% of every items that end up in their cart came from our recommendations model, which, you know, they love us because now they're selling a lot more items. Okay, with that, I think we should move to customer churn prediction, and I'll leave you with Bessel.
Thank you, Luis. So just to summarize what Luis demoed so far were applications of our recommendation in our text analytics for sentiment analysis apps. Another app that we have in our marketplace is the customer churn app, and that's very, very popular with some of our partners. So basically, the goal of this app is to predict which of the customers of a business are likely to churn. And churn can be actually defined as a soft condition. Doesn't necessarily mean the customer will cancel service, but you can define it as a period of inactivity. So let's say somebody didn't come to the store for 21 days, and you want to predict these people who are going to miss out on the next 21 consecutive days and maybe take some actions to bring them back and engage with them. And one of our partners for that is a company called Access SoftTech. What they do is they provide a mobile banking app to financial institutions, to more than 400 actually credit banks and credit unions and banks. And you know how popular mobile banking is, so each one of those banks has hundreds of thousands of users using the app. So the penetration through Access SoftTech to all the end users is pretty great. And so what they want to do is predict which one of their users of the mobile app for those different institutions is likely to have no activity in the next 21 days. And the reason they want that solution is because they get paid by the banks for the usage of the app they provide for them. So they came to us and they provided us with some historical data of the events of the usage of the users using the app. And we mapped this to our API for the churn app, built a model, validated on new data in market, and the results were pretty outstanding for something that just takes a couple days to map and configure, and then it's good to go forever. And again, the purpose of these apps is that it's fully automated once you put them in production. It's an ongoing, continuous application that retrains itself and provides scores on an ongoing basis and also performance evaluation. So just to give a sense of the accuracy, at 10% of false positive, the model captured 72% of the churners. And another metric that's more popular actually with customer churn is the lift over a random model. And in layman terms, the easiest examples I can give is if you take 100 customers at random, and let's say your global churn rate is 15%, you're going to capture 15 churners of those 100. But once you have the model score that the users and provide likelihood scores for churn, and you take the users with the 100 highest scores, then that model provided, in this particular case, between 5 and 6 times lift, which meant 76 of the 100 users would have been correctly identified as churners. So that's the power of the churn API. And we have two ways to consume the app right now. What you see to the right side is basically a GUI much like the GUI that Luis demoed for recommendations and APIs, and the text analytics API. So here the customer can enter some, after they upload their data, they can enter some parameters that they might want to tune, the most important of which is the churn condition, which I mentioned is flexible. So you defined what your churn is, and that's actually the beauty of it. So in this case, zero interactions in 3 weeks would define a churn condition. And then the app automatically will create the labels under the hood and prep the features for training, retrain itself, and then score new customers. Not only is this flexible to set at the get-go, but actually if next month they decide to change that to 4 weeks, they can easily do so, and the model will be updated with that. So it will be then optimized to predict churn for people who are inactive for 4 consecutive weeks. And you also don't need to have zero interactions. In some cases, which we call passive churn, you can have under a certain threshold of interactions for the period. So let's say you used that mobile app only one time in 21 days. And let's say your threshold is 2. So that will constitute churn as well. And so usually the first time around, it's helpful to do your first model, the POC, with this environment. It's much easier. And then we have a fully programmatic interface to the API that then we automate together with the clients, and then the data ingestion, the mapping to the API, the defining the labels under the hood, creating the features, training the model, scoring and sending back scores becomes one automated process. Luis had a demo in the beginning where recommendations and sentiment analysis were tied together. We have scenarios where clients actually sign up for a couple of these apps, for example, recommendations and churn. And we have one client that is actually using the outcome of the recommendation app as a mitigation strategy to the churners predicted by the churn app. So whoever's likely to churn, let's look at what they actually like, get their recommendations, and send them to them as a mechanism to bring them back.
That is right. Yes. Thank you, Vesely. The important thing here is that you can apply churn. You know, we use it for financial institutions just because that was one of the customers that we have actually measured the actual results, right? But it can be applied to any of your businesses, right? Whether it's retail or financial institutions or any other business where you have customers that are coming back or that may not come back. And then, in a sense, by knowing that, you can change the future. Okay, so that's the end of our presentation, and let's go for Q&A. I imagine you have some questions for us. Yes, sir. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Get some mics here.
Okay, so we'll get some microphones. If you want for now, like, I'll repeat your question.
For a service
from a service plate perspective, what's involved in your firm? When you say that you have full programmatic interface,
so I'm just looking at it from a service play. We're partnered to Microsoft. I just want to say, where do we come in here? I mean, you were talking about the programmatic approach to it. Is that where from a service play will come in?
Exactly. So let me actually show you, to be more specific, let me just kind of, let's say that you were using the recommendations engine, for instance. So let me actually go into the gallery, which is where we were a second ago. And here you can see, for instance, the documentation for the API on how to consume it. I know that we have shown some UI to you guys right now, just because it's easier to visualize it. But here, for instance, you can, okay, there we go. So you can see how we have APIs to add items to the catalog, to add usage files, to train the model, everything that you can do in the UI, and more you can do through APIs.
And there's example program code that actually shows you how you call the APIs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, sir.
I have an architectural question. Is there a limitation of how much data ML can process in a time? I know we are talking about Hadoop, we are talking about petabyte size of data, but when it comes to processing it in ML, or whether bringing it to a visualization in a Power BI, is there a limitation?
Yeah, there is always a limitation, that's the answer. But the question is, what is that limitation? So the answer is yes. Yeah, and it depends on the service, right? So for instance, in the case of text analytics, the way it works is you send entries to the API. And for instance, right now we can do about 1,000 transactions, sorry, not 1,000 transactions, but rather 1,000 elements per second. So if you send us a batch of 1,000 elements within a second, you will have them scored in our tests anyway. So that one is more of a question of throughput, right? Because they are not related to each other. In the case of recommendations, because then you actually have to train a model, it's about how much data can I use to train this model, right? So yes, we do have some limitations, and they are actually documented. We have limitations on the catalog size, for instance. Right now, we support up to 100,000 items in the catalog. And also, as well as usage. Right now, it's two gigabytes worth of usage is what we support. The key here is that, at least for recommendations, you don't need to send us all the data that you have accrued over the last 3 months for your transactions. In reality, a good sample of the data usually is sufficient enough to provide a pretty good recommendations model. Also, in terms of recommendations, the pattern that we see when someone says, like, oh, I have all this data, once we actually analyze the data is that they have, like, you know, 1,000 items that they actually sell pretty often, and then there are another 99,000 items that sell, like, one or two times. So then you can just cut the long tail, and your problem is gone. There is somebody in the back.
Yeah.
Yes.
How did you cope with the intra-correlation with respect to the consumption of non-churners scattered over different time periods? Because that is going to influence the predictive power of your model. Did you sample them or?
So.
Because I'm going to consume, I consumed last quarter, I'm going to consume this quarter. So there can be a correlation between my consumption behavior of last quarter and this quarter.
That's true. So what happens under the hood is, based on the labeling period that you provide or your churn condition, let's stick with the 21-day example. Basically what the app does is creates these periods where you have 21 days set aside just for seeing what's going to happen, basically the labels. And then the previous, whatever time period for training, you also can choose from the parameters settings for features. And we do this, if you have 2 years of data, we do this going backwards many, many times, so, and creating these periods that can capture any seasonalities as well. And yes, for the same user, you could have a period where they were a churner, and so a training record for them was created as being a churner. In another period when they actually had the activity, they are a non-churner. But though that the correlation between one actually is being taken care of by having millions and millions of records like this. I don't know if that makes sense, but the point to make here is that we are simulating this period where we are just checking whether the people that had activity in the previous whatever time period actually did not have anything here.
One thing I should point out for churn is that you know, we have actually, for churn, you can always create some kind of custom model, right? Like, and at times we have had some customers that have said, do I need a custom model or should I use the churn API, right? And we always think that a custom model is going to outperform a generic solution in a sense, right? Because maybe there are some special features that you can have and so forth. But interestingly enough, the generic churn model that we have seems to work really well, right? In other words, by doing a custom model, sometimes you get just a little bit of improvement, but you had to spend a bunch of time doing the data science behind it. So you can always do this exercise, but in our experience, in many cases, we are actually pretty surprised that we can use a generic model to analyze churn. Yeah. Yes, sir? I'll repeat your question if you want. Yeah, so the question is whether the recommendation models are specific or are they generic. The models themselves are trained on your transaction data. So in a sense, the model itself is specific. The engine to produce that model is generic. which is pretty interesting, right? Because we can use the same engine to produce a model for retail, the same engine to produce a model for media, even though the usage patterns are actually different. I hope that answers your question.
Okay, so I had one question. If you have voice data, so you have a customer calling in on the phone,
yes,
and they're maybe likely to sell something, or maybe on the other side you have a service and they might quit your service. Is there anything with churn models that could help with seeing if that person's likely to quit and maybe you offer them a discount or a refund or something like that?
So let me see if I understand your question. So I think you're saying you have some kind of customer relationship management system where people call you, and you want to know when the customer service representative answers the phone, that they can see, oh, this person is very likely to leave. Therefore, maybe I should give them a discount when I talk to them. Is that the question?
Yeah, that's a question, because the actual situation is there's supervisors over those representatives getting the call,
yeah.
And so there's... Yeah. Logic around, did they say the right things to try to keep the customer?
Yeah.
And some of that's recorded. So there's just, the question is, what can you do with that voice information to judge?
Oh, you're talking about the voice information itself.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I thought that you were talking about the churn model first. Actually, that's a real scenario, and we have discussed it with some of our customers. Currently, we don't do like sentiment based on the speech itself or the tone of voice. Right, that would be very interesting, by the way. But we don't have that today, right? However, if you were to transcribe using something like the speech APIs, what they say to text, right, you could kind of understand based on their expressions or what they are saying, what the sentiment is. Now, imagine just like I showed you a graph for sentiment for a year. Now, what if you had a graph of sentiment over the call period, right? Where you can see like, oh, maybe the customer wasn't necessarily frustrated, but 10 or I don't know, like 30 seconds into the discussion, like he's using words that tell us that this guy is frustrated, right? So that you could definitely build something like that with our APIs, and then an action can take place, such as like, maybe the manager of the customer's service representatives will say, you know what, get out of the way, I'll take care of this customer, or something like that, right? Yeah, but it's a fair scenario, yes. Anyone else? Okay, if there are no more questions, I thank you very much for your time. Thank you.